You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
I think the best thing I can do at this point, right, is to talk about this on podcasts like this and say, this is a cult with extremely dire, like, political consequences for the rest of the world.
Welcome to Holy Ghosting, a podcast about deconstruction and the cult of YWAM. I'm Lindsay Stranigan.
I'm Meg Weber.
I'm Sarai Johnson.
And today on the pod, we are talking all things YWAM, how culty it is, our personal experiences with it, and D.L. Mayfield is here to help us take down this evangelical giant.
I'm so ready. It's, you know, almost the 50th anniversary of YWAM, and it's time for us to take this mother down. So,
hi, I'm D.L. Amen. Praise the Lord. Also, Lauren Cunningham just died recently, so we got that going for us. It's still going. YWAM.
Oh, I thought it was going to die with him.
If only. No, his legacy is going to live on. Yeah, I know people have been waiting for this day for a long time. He's dead, and YWAM's still going, so sorry about that, folks. But oopsies. Today, we're going to get into it. We all have some personal experience with YWAM, which we'll share a little bit. We're going to do a part two of this episode. So my family is a YWAM family through and through. We have all done YWAM in some form or another. My youngest sister was like in the cult of YWAM for 14 years?
Too long.
We will give it a little bit into personal stories today, but what we want to get into is what YWAM is, the history of them, how they were founded, what it looks like to take part in YWAM, and just all the culty aspects of this organization. Because let me tell you, it is incredibly culty. They are so far reaching. They are a global missions organization who targets youth specifically, hence the Youth with a Mission, which is what YWAM stands for. Although I want to know, what have you guys heard that YWAM also stands for? What are the other? There's always the jokes, right? The
Young Wolves After Maidens.
Wow.
That's my favorite one.
Like, what does
you
that even
will
mean?
Always mate. No, I made that one. That's not. They don't let you do that there. That's actually incorrect.
It's a place to find your spouse, right? Like, how many people went to YWAM and found their lifelong quote unquote partner, you know?
But you want wolves. A marriage? That's another good one. There you go.
You want a marriage? Question mark?
Yeah.
So good.
Yep.
Sarai's always very good at this game. Yeah.
Wow.
While so many people do get hitched in YWAM, it is Youth with a Mission, started by old Lauren Cunningham in the year 1960. I would love to play a little clip. So this all started with Lauren Cunningham, one man. He had, when he was 20 years old, this is the theme when we're talking about short-term missions. We just did a series on Savior Complex with Renee Bach, who was called by the Lord to Africa when she was 19 years old. And Lauren was 20 when he heard from the Lord. And he had a vision. And he was on a mission trip when he had this vision. He was in the Bahamas, I believe, you know, white person in a brown country, right? I mean, naturally. So,
and of course.
And so let me see. If I share my screen, is that how I need to do this? Okay, hold on.
Aaron, God spoke to me in my language, which was waves. I saw a picture of waves, and he captured my mind right away. And I was just, let's see, I was about 20 at the time. And so as I was looking at the waves started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And by this time, I was like a topographical map. I was now above, looking down at the continents of the world in my visual video going on in my mind. And I was seeing the waves coming into the continents, and they became waves of young people sweeping across every continent of the world. I was overwhelmed. It was way beyond the ninth wave. It was wave after wave, and then they just swept over the whole world. As God used that visual, that also is his voice.
Do you think that they were waves of white teenagers?
That's exactly my question, Meg. When we're thinking about these waves of white teenagers taking over every continent in the world, it gives it a different flavor. And I also want to clarify, when I said YWAM, it's like the 50th anniversary, not the founding of YWAM, but the founding of the Dominionist, explicitly principled, we need to take over all seven forms of culture in every country in the world for Jesus Christ. Lauren Cunningham had that vision in 1975. So that's sort of like what I'm thinking about, but it's very interesting to know even the earlier history in 1960. But by 1975, they were explicitly saying, God wants to give every country on the earth to the people who please him, which are evangelical Christians. Great. Sounds so great.
Sounds familiar. Seems like
the visual of the waves. I'm like, just also, we're just drowning all the other countries. Like, just that's,
this is Noah's Ark.
Reverse Noah's Ark. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not happy imagery. I mean, maybe it was to Lauren, but I feel like to the rest of the world, it's,
I mean,
not.
To countries that do not really want to be colonized by white, patriarchal, Western supremacist Christian countries, YWAM has been a tsunami. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, Christian missions has been a tsunami of destruction of cultural norms, indigenous practices, all this stuff. So I'm like, dude, maybe Lauren was getting some access to a deity that is maybe not a good one. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he just really likes surfing. And you know what? Listening,
he could love surfing. Was this a dream he had, or was this like a mushroom trip?
He was too good of a boy to be doing
mushrooms.
He
was high on God. He was just praying. High on Christ.
Didn't you ever have a vision from you? A vision, okay? He's like freaking Paul, all
was
right?
Was this a waking vision then?
I just have to say his name to get the Sarai reaction. Yeah, so he had this initial vision. I did see online that Lauren Cunningham did end up visiting every country in the world, supposedly. He went to them all. YWAM is now in, I believe, over 180 countries. They have 1,100 YWAM locations with over 18,000 staff.
Jeez.
Fun fact, they don't pay their staff. So that's an interesting. Their model is very different than a lot of other No. It's all you
all
have to
volunteers.
Raise support.
They,
yeah.
Yeah. No, what the base leadership is not getting paid?
No.
No.
They have to raise their own support. And some of the, like some of the money for like running the bases comes from the students there, but like the students don't pay the salary of the staff members. Like, that's to me what makes it such a cult, is you're asking people to beg for money to do this ministry. So it has to be like a special thing from God. And so you can't take that away from leadership, right? Leadership has to buy all in, meaning they have to rely on God's help and support, and it kind of restores their faith in the whole thing. So to give a salary, I think, to the head staff would actually cause people to start to question it more. That's my personal theory, but that's how it works in so many MLMs and in places like that. So
yeah, it's totally an MLM. Really true.
And as I recall, people send their, so I think that there's, you know, a number you're trying to raise. People send their support to YWAM and they like disperse it to you. Like, I don't know how it works. If you need to have like a little spending money, like, this is where Candace would be better, as obviously she was employed by them for a very long time, and like had to do, like, she was on staff with YWAM, had to do taxes and stuff. So they get donations and they do give you money. So there's, I'm not totally sure how it works on the back end, but yeah, it was weird. And fun fact, as Danielle and I were just talking about this, is that I always felt like uncomfortable giving. I was like, because Candace always wanted like me to support her, and I was like, but I don't love YWAM. And so I paid for her cell phone bill while she was in YWAM, and like their family. So, because I was like, I'm not like cutting a check to YWAM. They skeeved me out. I was like, is all of this money going to you, or are they skimming some off the top? Mm-hmm. Which a head honcho for YWAM in 2018 was caught for embezzlement and fraud, and he had apparently embezzled like $3 million. He was at YWAM, Kona. He was at like the University of Nations. So.
Oh, big money place.
Shocker.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, turns out when you have all of this money coming through and unchecked power with no real organizational structure, that is a recipe for gross, it's not even negligence, it's just greed and power.
We live in a capitalist society. So, like, consumerism needs money, and you're telling people that their basic needs are sort of going to be handled by YWAM, but then anything beyond that, it's like, how are they supposed to live?
I think that's what we want to get into today, is that the way that they target young people specifically, like this was Lauren's vision, right? Young people. And so he was saying like young people weren't taken seriously before, you know, you had to have all this life experience. And he's like, no, let's get the youth, let's get them in and suck them in. And it's like their prefrontal cortexes aren't even formed yet, right? Like they're not capable. They don't know what they want, but man, are they passionate and do they have a lot of energy, and they don't have a lot of money or experience. So like you suck them in and it's like, it becomes their world, their identity. They buy in. And man, that's the thing about YWAM that's fascinating, is like the buy-in, the amount of people. I don't know if there's a study out there. I'd be so curious if you do one DTS, which is their initial school. Everyone has to do a DTS, which is a discipleship training school. It is 6 months. It is what, 3 months, a lecture phase, and then a 3 month outreach or 2 month outreach. Or 2 month outreach
sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can go to a YWAM base, you know, across, there's many, many different ones. You can, there's one right here in Salem, Oregon. That's the closest one here to us. And so that's where you start. And then after that, there's so many other schools and they suck you in. They want you to be staff. Like you do one DTS, 6 months, and then you can be a leader after that. Yep. You can lead other DTSs. That's all, that is all you need.
Hey, you know what? God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called through a DTS, obviously. That's how it works. That's just science. That's pedagogy right there.
So our show of hands here, who here has done a DTS with YWAM? Oh, just you, Danielle? I thought you just had me. Meg.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you. What was the question?
Oh, I was asking who had done a DTS
show amongst of hands. Us.
And my husband,
Meg.
Me,
right. I don't know if I count because my family did a Crossroads / DTS when I was a child. So I was taken on one.
Did it say DTS? Because then, yes, you did.
Yeah, it was a CDTS. It was for adults at a crossroads in their life who are not young and impressionable but had kids and stuff. And so we were drug onto that when we were kids.
But yeah. They didn't have enough people sign up for the Crossroads, so they combined it with the DTS. So it was like a couple of older people. There was like one old couple, like literally in their 60s, my family, and then like a single mom. And then they threw us in with a bunch of 20-year-olds. And then the hilarious thing is my dad was like in his like 30s or whatever at this point, because I think I was like 11 when we went. And his like team leader like was like a 20-year-old like blonde woman who's like, and my dad has been like a pastor at this point, and this is like his midlife crisis, and this like 20-year-old blonde woman is leading us around Mexico. My dad was losing his ever loving
mind. Well, he basically just took over.
Yeah, because she was a mess. Yeah. Like it was a horrific mess. Like they did not have, like I remember the food situation was really disorganized. Like how it was just like it was. Bonkers.
Well, and our mom loved every second of it because she was obsessed with missionary narratives and like you have to rely on God, and the weirder, more dangerous situations you get in, like the more you have a story to tell of God. And I remember just being a really sensitive autistic kid and basically being not having a great time at all. And my mom just loving it, like loving the scorpions, loving sleeping on the dirt floor, like loving not knowing what we're going to eat the next day, and just being like, okay, like, I guess we're here too. And I think Lindsay, before you even said that, I had totally forgotten that we had gone on a DTS as a family.
Wow. Core memory unlocked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of loved it because I felt like I had a lot of freedom. I mean, there was weird, like, yeah, my mom, there's so many family stories from this, like, one trip. Because, yeah, there was some danger involved and being, like, way out in this, like, Weechel village in the mountains where there's these, like, poisonous scorpions. And so there's, like, some family lore on that. My mom also, like, because we were there during, like, Christmas and New Year. And so the, like, in these, like, very Catholic towns. And so they would do these, like, all-night processionals with fireworks, and my mom couldn't sleep. And so she freaking stuck, like, aspirin in her ears as earplugs.
That seems like a bad idea.
And then it, yeah, and then it dissolved and, like, was fusing to her eardrum, and she had to go to, like, a hospital in the middle of nowhere in Mexico. And, yeah, so there's, but those have nothing to do with, like, YWAM and just more, like, poor.
That's planning. Honestly, I like this Stranigan lore almost as much as I like the YWAM dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that's why, like, I never went on to do a DTS myself. Like, you know, my parents have, both of my sisters have. I feel like that was enough for me. There's parts I loved. Like, as a kid, you know, we're running around, like, we loved getting, like, a Coca en bolsa. Like, you get your Coke in a bag with a straw because they want to keep the bottle for recycling. And I remembered thinking that was so, so cool. That's, like, what I remember from Mexico.
I find it really interesting that YWAM kind of uses a similar recruitment tool to the military, like going after young people, kind of giving them this, well, non-accredited education if you go to one of their quote universities. But how interesting that they're really going after and kind of using the same techniques, a very short training course, and then shipping you off to some place to do their mission.
It's completely an alternative to the military, I think, for Christian parents especially. Yes. Like, it is a place where they send their problem children.
To join the Lord's army, you know? It's where the Lord's army
Danielle's
is.
Face.
Oh. Well, it's, I think this is a really interesting thing to talk about, because I feel like there's a few different types of people that end up in YWAM, right? And probably similar to the military too, right? People who don't have that many options. But I think it's actually really important to talk about the types of people who go to YWAM. And I'll just share my story really quick about how I did a DTS at age 17, because I'm not like the story like most people, but I was undiagnosed autistic, homeschooled, heavily indoctrinated to be missionary by my mom, who was obsessed with missionary stories. So I started young. YWAM has a publishing house where they put out all of these missionary biographies, plus all of these histories of famous Americans, half of whom are not Christian, but they are conservative. Okay. And so homeschoolers around the world, honestly, read these books. I read tons of them. My mom was like, basically, the end is coming. If the end doesn't come, you have to be a missionary. And I was like, okay. So I was given no other option in life. Like, in our family, it was Lindsay was a smart one. We will send Lindsay to college. Danielle, no. You are going into YWAM. And so I graduated a year early because of being homeschooled. So I was 17 years old when my parents were like, you're going to do YWAM in Montana, because they were friends with some of the leaders there. So I was so young, so naive, so highly indoctrinated. And YWAM is just the perfect stepping stone, right? Mm-hmm. It would just repeat all the same things that my parents had been telling me about missions. I did all that. I was still 17 when I came back from being in India for 2 months, and they asked me to be on staff full time. And for that to be my life trajectory from there on out. And I said, yes. I mean, what else are you going to say?
Yeah.
When you've been pumped full of all this information, you're given no other option. My parents did not want me to go to college. They were like, this is what you should do, which would have set me up on a life of having to be dependent on other Christians and their financial support in order to keep myself afloat. And I would have to invest ever more heavily into the cult to get that support. For some reason, I said yes because I was in the cult. Then I came home to sort of like get my bearings and raise support. And as soon as I came back, I was like, I don't really want to do that. Maybe I should go to college. And I literally just applied to two colleges I had heard of. I'd only really heard of two. They were both Bible colleges, and that's a whole nother story. But I just think it's so interesting to have that sort of trajectory for the isolated homeschool kid. Now, there was a few of other people like that. Now, the other people that come are the problem kids, right? Where the parents or their churches put pressure on them, like, you better sort your life out. Do YWAM. Then, this is the saddest one. It's a lot of queer kids, okay? A lot of kids who are queer and are desperate to prove that they want to follow God, and they'll give up everything and become a missionary if God will take away their homosexuality, right? And this is like their big last thing to prove that they're trying to serve God and not themselves. So those are the three groups I kind of saw in YWAM. Sorry, Lindsay, I don't know if you want to say anything.
No, go Meg.
I was going to say the kind of YWAM, the kind of kid I was that YWAM attracted me. So I had a friend. I ended up marrying him. He went to YWAM and he told me all about it when he got back. He just was like so on fire for the Lord. He was like, had this amazing experience, went to Malaysia, went to Australia for his DTS. I was like, what? And he just was like, this is an experience that like changed him in a spiritual way. Like, I think we've talked about this with YWAM, that it changes me. You know, I'm the one who receives all of the changes from these experiences, and I can come home and, you know, be more holy or whatever. And we don't talk about it like the Mormon mission. It's not required by our church, but I was in a Foursquare church. And so missions were very important. Missions were like one of their primary, primary priorities. And so when he came back and told me how excited he was, I graduated from high school early at 16. I was in private schools. And so I just was ready to get out. I was ready to get out of education that was like boring to me. And I had been in college already and had already been an overachiever working multiple jobs. So when this opportunity came up, it felt like almost like I could take a breather, like someone else was going to be in charge of where I went and what I did. And I was really desperate for an adult, I think, to like help me manage being an 18, 19-year-old out in the world. Like I didn't know what to do. And it was a bit of a reprieve. I also came from a divorced family. My brother and I kind of grew up really young and decided that we were both going to just like start our lives. And so this was a way for me to like soft start, I think. I didn't know what to do. I was in school, going to school for something that I wasn't like excited about. I just was like, this is probably all I can be. So YWAM was an opportunity for me to do something that was just me sacrificing and giving, and that I could spend these like 7 months just letting God use me in every way. And I thought it would give me a trajectory. I thought it would give me like an idea of who I wanted to be when I grew up. And instead, it was like one of the most traumatizing experiences of my life, but also gave me some of the best like friendships and really opened my eyes to the fact that there are so many people in the world. That was the one thing I loved about YWAM, was that it truly was not the American melting pot that I was used to. It was an international group of people, and the conversations I have and the experiences that I had one-on-one with other kids who were in my DTS are really the things that I cherish. But I was a kid who was a little bit lost. I was an overachiever. I wanted to serve. I wanted to like let God use my talents, and I had no way of practically doing that. And YWAM just kind of showed up as a thing that was like, hey, you're an impassioned kid. You can endure. You can self-sacrifice. We're the place for you. Like, come and join us. And it was not great. It just wasn't great. I was a sad kid. And they really took advantage of that.
I hate that for you. It's wild to me that the age of which they'll accept people. I don't know how young you can go and do your own DTS, but you two were clearly very young when you did it. And like you're saying, the trajectory, you think that this is going to train you up and give you these skills to
instead
take that
of college. In, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And it gives you the skills to stay in YWAM.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And nothing else. Yep. And And, you know, that's another thing, how these groups work, right? You invest everything into this group, which makes you less likely to leave because you don't have a college degree. You don't have any work experience that any job will, you know, identify as work. So I'm just so happy that I ended up saying no. A part of the reason I said no is because, again, I was 17 and one of my team leaders was a man in his mid-20s. And he had really taken a special liking to me and was very excited about me coming back on staff and us working together. And, you know, when I was with him, I was like, this is amazing. I've never had an older guy, you know, be into me. And I think the second I was out, I was like, oh, no, thank you. But like, just predatory shit. You met him, Lindsay. Yeah. Remember when we went to London and met up with him?
Oh, yeah, that was him. That's right. He was cute, too. So.
He was 25.
I was 17. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cool, guys. Not cool. And I just happened to be demisexual autistic, so I didn't, you know, respond to any romantic overtures. And I was like, I'm here for the Lord. What are you doing? Like, so, you know.
I think the only reason I didn't stay and the only reason I went home was because I had a fiance. I had someone and a life and people I wanted to go back to, but I also met and formed really strong relationships. And there was a family who lived in Melbourne, which is where I was based, and their son and I became really good friends. And, you know, I would go there for like dinners with his twin sisters and his parents. And it was really lovely. And I was homesick. So like having a family to go hang out with was really great. But if I had not had, you know, my now husband waiting back in California for me, I think I for sure would have just fallen into the pipeline. And, you know, who knows, right? At that point. And DL, you had mentioned something about the seven.
Oh, yeah. The Dominion mandate.
Yeah. Can you talk about the seven Dominion mandates?
Yes, I can. So I do not think about YWAM very much because I don't want to think about YWAM very much. So this has been an interesting experience when Lindsay was like, you want to come talk about it? And I'm also like, I only did a DTS. Like I wasn't in it for a long time. I've never researched it. I'm busy researching other terrible evangelical men like Dr. Dobson. But, you know, I was like, I got to just refresh my memory. So I listened to this kind of famous talk that Lauren Cunningham gave on the Dominion mandate, which if you didn't grow up in evangelical land, you know, you're like, that sounds creepy. Well, it is. And basically, this is what Lauren Cunningham is saying. Like, so in 1975, he had this second vision, right? And other people were having this too. And in fact, you know, people like Francis Schaeffer were really into this idea that God wanted, right, Christians to take over like seven elements of culture, right? To take back the nations for God. So these are the seven hallmarks of culture. One is home. One is church, one is schools, one is media, one is the arts, entertainment, and sports, one is commerce and business, and then the last one is government and politics. And Lauren sort of makes it clear that the last one in particular, like government and politics, like he's like, Christians have sort of shied away from that, but like we also need to dominate that place too. So re-listening to some of his sermons on the Dominion mandate, which comes from Genesis, right? God saying like, go forth and, you know, rule over the earth and all creation. And Lauren's like, that's what we're supposed to do. God has given all authority to Jesus, right? In heaven and on earth. Now we have that same authority and we must go into all nations, take over all seven domains of every single nation on earth. So we know about American Dominionists, right? Like we have to live with the impacts of American Dominionists every day in our politics. Like the current, you know, Speaker of the House is an American Dominionist. Now, what's fascinating is that Lauren Cunningham was like, didn't talk about America at all. He was like, no, babes, we got to do this everywhere. Now, let's do a thought experiment. What if, for funsies, there was a Muslim organization named Youth with a Mission, and they were like, you know what? The one true deity has told us that we're the only ones that should be in charge of every nation on earth. And we don't want to just be in charge of their governments. We want to be in charge of every sphere of that culture and society. And we know it's going to happen. Allah tells us all the time it's going to happen. And this generation, Allah is going to use the young of this generation to go forth into every nation to take back for Allah what has always been Allah's. And you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
just listen to that.
Yeah. We would freak out and we'd be like, terrorists.
Are you kidding me? Seriously. All the Christians shouting about Sharia law. Yeah.
Because we are trying to take over the world. YWAM. When I say we are, you know what I mean? Like, that's what Lauren Cunningham was saying.
Which is so American, right?
Yes.
And conservatives are always freaking out about how many babies Muslims are having because they're taking over the world. You know, you've heard this before that, like, white people were going to be outnumbered. Yeah. We need to birth more.
The great replacement theory is so important to missions. That's what you're talking about, Lindsay. And yeah. I just think, like, the best thing I can do as someone who was indoctrinated into this shit as a small child and basically told this is the only path you have for yourself. You're never going to make it in the real world. You have to go into missions because you're a gender nonconforming person socialized as female. So I couldn't be a pastor. I had to be a missionary. Like, I think the best thing I can do at this point, right, is to talk about this on podcasts like this and say, this is a cult with extremely dire, like, political consequences for the rest of the world. And I just think we can poo-poo it. We can tell funny stories. We can tell sad stories. But when you take a step back, you're like, this is really bad news.
Yep.
And they call it good news a million billion times to the impressionable kids that they get into it. It's just so bad, y'all, that sometimes it's hard for me to dip my toe into these waters because I have the autistic urge to be like, what's actually going on here? And they say it. They say the quiet part loud all the time.
All the time.
And they just over-spiritualize it, package it with, like, you know, religious indoctrination materials like missionary biographies, worship music. And then they create these experiences within a DTS that it kind of sucks people in. I'm like, all of that's important. But underlying all of this is the dominionism. And this belief, this ironclad belief that God wants Christians, specifically American, you know, evangelicalish Christians, to take dominion in every country in the world.
Yeah.
That's not good.
And they've been trying to do that for a really long time. So my ex-husband, I never did YWAM ever. I was like, that's for rich kids. Like, I have to get a job. So, okay. My ex-husband went to Bertigny, Switzerland, to a base there that thinks of itself as, like, highly intellectual. Like, there were ties to Francis Schaeffer and shit. Like, it's just, they have this.
The Switzerland base is, like, infamous. It's, it's like.
And they're, like, the arts and culture dominion. Like, that's what they think of themselves.
Yes. Yeah. They had one of their leaders, I forget her name now, but had a lot of videos teaching about these domains. And Stu and I watched them a long time ago. You know, when we were still married, and I remember being really like, well, this is interesting. And this makes sense of, like, Leviticus and all these laws books, you know, looking at those and kind of extrapolating them and recognizing their public policy. Not that I thought we should base public policy on that at all, but that it was interesting to read it that way and, like, have a little bit of a different approach to it. But I do think, like, currently people are talking about these seven domains. There's, like, seven mountain kind of theory, doctrine. It's happening so overtly in mainstream Christian evangelical circles. And yet normal people don't understand the implications of this. And, like, normal people being people who weren't indoctrinated. And I have the same urge as you, DL. Like, I want to understand what is going on behind the scenes on these things because I see – because I, too, was, like, a part of it. You know, I listened to Rush Limbaugh every day. I was so deeply, like, in that world where my mom was my only teacher for a really long time. And it just makes it really hard to have any kind of perspective about there being any other way to be in the world. You know, somebody it's just, how do you know? How do you, any 18-year-old going to college, like, it's really a weird thing, or just getting out of high school and figuring out their life, that's a lot. But when you're also told, like, you belong to God, you are not your own, your job is to essentially, like, comply with and be a part of this evangelical political machine and take this nation for Christ. And this, you know, YWAM is just that times at least, how many countries did you say there are that they are in? Like 180.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a lot. They're fun.
Everywhere. Oh, and then they also have their ships. So you can Mercy go to a country ships. Or you can live on a boat. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they have everything. They have an unaccredited university of the nations where you can take courses. You can be a student for life. You can take schools of counseling. You can take a school of worship and all of these things. Like, none of them are accredited. None of them are recognized in the real world. Like, you can take a 3-month school of counseling and then you're just like a counselor at YWAM. Like, then you're able to like help people through there, which I think now is the time to talk about the trauma bonding that happens in YWAM through a thing called Plumline. And I think it is maybe the most fucked up thing about YWAM.
Okay. This is a thing I have known nothing about as a former YWAMer. So maybe what I'm wondering is, did I experience this and not know that it was a like curriculum?
You probably did.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Is it okay if I sort of explain what my plumline was like? Because I think it might vary a little bit from DTS to DTS, but
yeah. And I only know what it is. I've, you know, not done a DTS, but I remember as the family DTS or whatever, like I remember people talking about it and it being, and spoiler alert, the whole concept and what I knew of it made me deeply uncomfortable and I wanted nothing to do with it, which is probably not surprising when I found out like that it was like this very emotional experience. And I was like, hard pass, I'm good on that. Yeah.
You're like, I'm 11. I'm going to go get a Coca and Bolsa.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go to you.
I love the ones who can disassociate out. It's a great skill to have. Now, speaking of disassociation, I don't have a lot of memories of my plumline because I don't have a lot of memories of certain things. But what it is, it's basically a night. And I think it's like earlier on in the DTS, right, where you know that it's going to be this big emotional experience. And basically, each student takes a turn sitting in a chair in front of everyone, and it's their time to confess the deepest, darkest sins they've ever experienced, confess what they're struggling with, confess everything. And so everyone around them is hearing that. You have to confess to the group, right? And then there's prayer. We pray for deliverance. We pray for healing. We pray over people. There's so much crying. Every person who's in the chair, right, has to cry. Now, I was stressed because I'm like 17, the goodiest little goody two shoes. I'm racking my brain. Like, what? I don't even know what I said. I don't think I cried. And I don't think I cried. And therefore, I'm like seen as suspect. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Right. You didn't confess the real stuff, DL, because otherwise you would have cried.
Yeah, you know what they called me in those spaces? And this is, you know, trigger warning for anti-Semitism, you know, kind of like the Pharisee heart. You think you're so righteous and you think you're so good. And but you have your own sin. I'm just like, what? But some of these kids, right? Again, the homosexuality stuff and drugs and just trauma. And
yeah.
So you pour it all out there. The group helps you absolve the bad feelings, right? The group prays for you and you come out not as yourself. Do you guys want me to show you like the official? It's very short, but basically it's called the Divine Plumline from like a verse in Amos. So basically what the plumb line, the divine plumb line, is supposed to do, it's, this is what it is, from identity lost to one that is restored to becoming a son or daughter of God. It is all about the journey of our hearts, out of which come the real issues of life. The development, breakdown, and restoration of personality is looked at through the eyes of the Holy Scriptures. Practical keys for healing, release, and developing maturity are presented. So it's literally about the breakdown, like causing young people to get to the point where they break down and they're like, please tell me who I should be. Build me back up. Like, tell me who to be. I reject everything that's me and I'm here to serve God. I only want to serve God. And like, that's an initiation ritual, y'all. Like, you break down someone's personality and you say, this is who you are. Now, if you're socialized as female, here's how you be a good Christian lady. You know, if you're a man, here's how you be a toxic Christian man. Like, all of that is expressed, like, they have all those. So everything after that is about how you are forming your identity. Every teaching session after that is about how do you form your identity in Christ. I can't remember anybody even asking me, like, what kind of music do you like? What kind of food do you like? Like, even that kind of stuff is not important in these spaces. Every single conversation is geared towards how much can you sacrifice for God? How can you build up your identity to be God's identity? Which, of course, is just a white, patriarchal, American, right, perspective.
And they want the crazy stories. They want, like, whatever it is that you confess in Plumline or whatever. First of all, now your entire team knows this about you. I'm sure deeply inappropriate things are said.
Very. I was shocked.
Yeah. I mean, and I know I was like in researching this on the internet and people are saying like very people who've committed incredibly illegal things, like all this stuff, but you're just supposed to forgive them. Yep. They're a new person now. Yep. You hear all this horrible stuff about them and then they're like rewarded for saying that and being like, look, God, you know, it's that God can redeem anyone mentality. And I know for a fact someone who got married in YOM stayed with someone who was wildly abusive and unsafe. And because of that messaging of God can redeem anyone. And he was that story for a time of like, I was an addict and I was crazy and I did all this stuff. And then I went to YOM to fix me. And spoiler alert, it didn't fix it. Not in the least bit.
Well, he comes from a long line of YOM families, I think should be also noted.
He was raised in Switzerland. Yeah, he was raised at YOM Switzerland and then married into our family. And it was
a disaster.
I wonder if my ex-husband knows him. I'm going to ask.
Probably.
Oh my God.
Hopefully not. Or maybe they deserve each other. I don't know. They're all. I just remember hearing stories of people. I think it was Christy. Stories and why like Plumline has stuck with me as a person who's never done one. And just hearing people about like being face down, prone on the floor, just like weeping. And you're just like, I am nothing. I am shit. I am garbage. These are the horrible things I've done. But like God saved me and pulled me up from that place. And that just sounds awful.
It sounds like every Sunday morning when you're talking about worship music, because it's so true. Like it's just,
it's a little cycle every week of I'm a worm. I'm nothing without God. I must commit myself further to God if I ever want to feel good. And you do feel good. Like people, when they cry and when you feel like you have community and you feel like you're going to be accepted and you feel like God's giving you the special mission and you're really tired and you're really young and it does feel good for a moment.
It's the only catharsis we're allowed to have in that setting because we're not allowed to have real feelings. We're not allowed to express ourselves. We don't even know how to find out who we are because we're not shown any pathway toward self-discovery. It's like, here, be the Proverbs 31 woman. That's your option. Go do that, which is everything, you know? Oh, you're 10. Why don't you lead Bible study? Like, it's just, honestly, it's just such a bizarre thing. But I also really, this whole plumb line thing, of course, brings me back to my favorite soapbox. One of my favorite soapboxes, which is accountability versus absolution. And it is another setting where, yes, they're breaking down people. And this is, again, like just such a wonderful part of a cult. And also, by the way, like Christians everywhere, in at least as I was growing up, we're like begging for brokenness. We would sing that fucking song, brokenness, brokenness is what I long for. Mm-hmm. And I was like a full like 30 something year old adult when I was like, this is fucking weird. Why do we think brokenness is like the goal for everything. And I remember there was like, okay, sorry. This is actually a little bit related, but there was this song about marriage by, one of those really annoying Christian bands. I can't remember. There was like Big Daddy Weave or something. Like, I don't remember. And it was a song about marriage. And it was like, I'm a broken person. I'm always going to be a sinner, like how we always know. And these things where people are confessing illegal things or past abuses or other things that they've done to harm people get in that chair. And then, yes, God forgives you and we all accept you as you are. You don't have to do any work to become a better person, to treat mm-hmm. other people any better, especially like if you're a man. And it is reinforcing over and over again that you can do anything you want to, but it's not really your fault. And if you do it, you're fallen and broken, but God can redeem you again and again. And that always is a losing proposition for people who aren't men and people who don't have proximity to power. And that's just one more way that we continue to display that. And it's, I don't know. We just see it reflected everywhere in our whole entire fucking culture. And it's really deep and really painful.
And you're reliving trauma without the care and support of the healing, right? There aren't steps or stages towards actual self-healing or self-realization about where these things came from or how they're affecting you as an adult or what you experience as a child. There's no recognition of the humanity part of a person. And it is solely just empty, make me an empty vessel so that you can fill me up with whatever you want me to be. And really, I mean, my experience, I don't know if I had a plumb line. I want to do research on like what year did they implement this.
So you did not have that experience at all, Meg, where people had to like confess stuff like testimony night or anything like that? Because to me, that was such an important part. And again, like it went all night. Like the point was to make people extremely tired and all of that shit. Like we were like, you get your water bottles because it's all night.
I know we did a lot of trauma dumping, and I know there was a lot of like, I thought of it as like, you know, peeling off the layers that you have lived of sin or not of righteousness.
Yourself. Isn't that sad?
Yes. But I mean, yeah. It wasn't, I didn't know about it ahead of time. Like when you talked about like everyone's preparing for it, you're like, got to figure out your story. I feel like I experienced these things in ways that were just, like I just walked into a room and they were like, now we're doing this. You must participate. But I can't, I honestly feel like that would be a thing that I would just not want to remember and not want to, like the exposure. I mean, I'm thinking back going, oh shit, what kinds of things did I talk about? Because by 18, 19 years old, I had experienced some real harsh shit. And unloading that, like actually sharing that was a really challenging thing for me up until my 30s, like even talking about things that I experienced in my youth. And to do that in front of a bunch of people that I didn't know, that I didn't feel safe with, yeah, I can imagine that was not an experience that I wanted to relive or remember. Because to me, it wasn't just a one night thing. To me, it was, that was what YWAM was. Mm. Every time you had those, we had a really big one like that. Actually, I'm remembering right before we went to decide which of the like three missions trips we were supposed to go to. And that like, okay, go have quiet time with God. You weren't allowed to talk to any of your friends or any people that were there. They like presented the options to us. And then they immediately made us disperse into, you know, solitary confinement places so that we could go pray and ask God like where we're supposed to go. And Sarai has talked about this before. The way that I chose was like, what's the one I don't want to do? What's the hardest one? What's the one I like really am afraid to go on? And that's the one I went to.
That's where God wants you to go, Meg. And I think that's so funny. I forgot all about the decision-making process, but yes, they make it such a big deal. Now, the one more thing I want to talk about Plumline, which is, it's sort of a similar microcosm of what does happen in evangelical churches constantly. Mm. And it's really, 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 really harmful in that so many people are like, I will dump all my trauma out. Yeah. God heals me in front of everyone. I feel good in front of everyone. Now, what happens the next time you start experiencing some issues from your past trauma? You can't talk about it. Otherwise, it invalidates God. It invalidates the work that happened. So you don't go to therapy. You don't address those issues. You just go to church a little bit more. You try a little bit harder next time you're singing a worship song, and you chase that feeling of absolution that you do not get from actually engaging with your feelings, with your lived experience, with your trauma. And like, I am the child of a mother who did plumb line instead of therapy, and it sucks, let me tell you. And just like, we, I think everybody on this call, right, we're trying to break those cycles by actually dealing with our shit and not offloading that to either the divine or a group that promises to make us feel better. And I just, I'm happy for that in my own life, but it's kind of wild how they kind of train you as very young, you know, impressionable youth to like, this is how you will, the only way to feel better in your life is to do these kinds of experiences.
We're like forcing ourselves to push aspects of normalness, our own normal ways. And of course, like the ways that we deal with trauma, because our bodies help us try to survive these things. And we're forced to continue to push all of the parts of ourselves into a shadow, meaning that we can't ever see it again. Like, we're not even aware that we are those ways. We are just like, what's wrong with me? I feel terrible all the time. Like, I do hate myself. I am a worm. God needs to redeem me and break me more, because that's the only place that I feel good is when I'm like emptied out. And it's not real. And it's also, again, it just continues to push the repression and the hiding of ourselves. It promotes secrecy. It promotes fucking gross shit happening all the time, because people are people. We don't need to like squish our natural things into a box that we can never look in again. And yet it's all still there. Like, we're still dragging it all around with us, even though it's something that we are begging to be able to let down. I want to lay down my burdens down by the riverside, you know? But you can't. You just can't.
Because we're longing for brokenness, right? We want to be broken.
Good thing there are these YWAM-trained counselors around.
Where they learn to do the plumb line. That's what they learn at the counseling school,
Cool. That's great. Perfect. Love it.
That's what sets you up to be a victim of spiritual abuse. Like, it breaks you down so that you fit into their little mold. Exactly. And so that the leaders who have no fucking formal training in anything, but they somehow hear from God better than you do because you're so broken. Yeah. And that's a really hard thing to argue with when someone's hearing from God and they're just like, well, God said it. So this is, and we talk about this a lot because this is such a thing in evangelicals, especially in the more charismatic circles, which YWAM, YWAM is very charismatic.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of visions. There's a lot of hearing the voice of God. And so, and you can't fucking argue with that. Yeah. Like, it's the voice of God, y'all. You know, that it doesn't get higher than that. I was reading an interview with someone who had been in YWAM for a long time, and I thought she like summed it up really well. We all know this to be true, but she said, you know, their ability, the leader's ability to hear God's voice always trumps your own connection to the Holy Spirit, said Abby, who endured daily flashbacks, anxiety, and cloudy thinking when she's thinking about YWAM. She said, those who asked questions were labeled in rebellion. Yeah. Those who tried to employ critical thinking had big red targets on their backs. And I had forgotten about that rebellion label, but that is such a way to, if you are not fitting in the mold, if you are not doing as they say, if you're not thinking as they think, you are in rebellion. There's no way to push back. There's no way to do it differently. You have to do it YWAM's way. And it's really terrifying. And that's why I'm not afraid to call it a cult. Their tactics are cult tactics. The way that they pull in young people whose brains are not fucking formed, and they suck them in and they make them financially dependent on them. They break down their emotional stability. They make you trauma bond with people and then tell you they have the answers for your life and who you are and what you're supposed to do.
And you can't trust yourself. Like, that's such a huge part of this. You cannot trust your own experience. It has to align with theirs. And again, the critical thinking piece, like, if you voice any doubts or questions, or if you aren't experiencing, like me not experiencing plumb line, right? All of a sudden you have people wanting to have prayer sessions with you. You get so much more attention and just so much more stress. I experienced that also in a Pentecostal Bible college I went to right after, YWAM. I couldn't speak in tongues because I'm autistic and didn't understand it. And so they would do like every other week, these huge prayer sessions for me, just squishing all their hands all over me and pressuring me. And it, you know, it was just like, that's the kind of shit that happens if you don't fall 100% in line in these groups.
Yep. They just add all of that. Be like us. Oh my God.
I will say, I have a thought when I was like reading all this, I want there to be like plumb line, like fanfic or something where like two like queer kids like confess their like homosexual urges and like during plumb line and then they fall in love and they leave.
Yeah, their eyes lock and they're like, oh, I love
they're
it.
Like, you too? Yeah, yeah.
You're I just feel hot. Like I like it.
It's had to have happened, right?
I hope so.
I mean, contestants of like The Bachelor have fallen in love with each other. So it's like, I'm sure it could happen in YWAM. But
hey,
they are
you're all stuck in that trauma bonding space. That's like you're going to have some connections, right?
I mean, I'm not saying their relationship lasts forever or that it's healthy at all. But yeah, I mean, trauma bonding can definitely make you feel like you love someone for...
And Lauren Cunningham's son directed a miniseries about 9/11.
Oh.
So.
What? Like that it was an inside job or what? It was the 9/11 thing.
No, it wasn't fully. It was called The Path to 9/11. And it actually, it like.
Is it because America deserved it? Because God, like, we weren't listening. Was this like the flood? Was this like the Noah's Ark flood that Lauren was talking about that we needed to like cleanse? God was going to cleanse the earth with all the white kids going to all the places.
Yuck. Wow, that's really extra upsetting language.
I didn't say it.
No, I'm not saying it's you. I'm saying it's them. It's not you. It's them.
Apparently, this 9/11 film was nominated for Emmy Awards, or was a miniseries starring Donnie Wahlberg.
What? Okay. As the narrator or as like...
The Wahlbergs are not good, y'all.
Really?
They are not good. They are abusive men who are finding a rebirth as being Catholics and Christians and all that. And the sins of their past are washed away because they're really into the Bible now.
Redemption. Cool. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, mm-hmm. Here it says, ABC received a range of criticism from terrorist experts and people portrayed in the film that The Path to 9/11 contained false scenes, distorted events, and misrepresented actions of people. No shit. So
let's give him an Emmy.
Made Muslims look bad. So that's Lauren's son. But again, he's in the arts and culture part. He's like, it's more subtle than that. And I feel like YWAM, I spent a fair amount of time on their website last night because of their their branding, like their websites, like the verbiage they use, like they know how to speak to the youth. I was dying.
Are they better marketing than He Gets Us?
Maybe. Or maybe it's on par, like it's a similar vibe,
but it's going after the youth, right?
Yeah. I had taken a gummy and I texted Megan Sarai because I was like looking through some of the schools and the courses that you can take. And I was freaking dying because I was like, first of all, is this like the name of like a bad like romance novel or is this the name of like a YWAM course? Because there's one. This is my favorite one. This is like YWAM Kona. There's the Fire and Fragrance DTS. The subtext says to the ends of the earth for love. And it says, we want to be sold out and fully surrendered to Jesus. Prayer and worship is at the center of everything we do. Our mission is to send out young people with burning hearts to the ends of the earth, carrying the love of Jesus. That's it. That's all I know about Fire and Fragrance. You're going to the ends of the earth. The picture on the website looked like an outdoorsy, like they're like it looked like they're like rock climbing, like in a desert or something. There's literally no information, but that one is full. So you have to wait and sign up for another one. That's full. The ends of the earth one. Or you could just do their regular DTS in Norway or the Arab Gulf, a little bit, you know, different. And then there's another one. There's the Brave Love DTS.
Mm. What are these names? I need more information.
They know kids these days are horny. They want them to take a DTS that's young women after men, you know, the whole thing.
Well, the Brave Love DTS is women only. They want to train and equip women to communicate with conviction what biblical womanhood looks like in our world today.
Oh, they're making trad wife influencers.
This is that group that takes homeschool kids and gets them into political debate thing. It's like a whole new way of infiltrating.
Not new, but yes, a way. Not new. Very not new, but yes.
Very same.
Yeah. There's so many weird, I mean, we know people who are lifers with YWAM, literally who have been on staff with YWAM for 30, 40 years. People stay. They do not leave, which I don't understand.
Where do they go? That's the thing about, again, a high control religion or a cult, like the high cost of leaving is real because you lose your community. You lose probably the respect of the fucking people who've been supporting you all this time, unless you're coming back to do something godly here. Like it's, you lose everything. And as we already mentioned, they're fake school isn't accredited, so it doesn't count as education. Nope. Their jobs aren't real either. You're getting money from other people to support you doing whatever staff role you're doing, which how does that translate that much into like normal life for most people? Like, I think there's a lot of reasons why people don't leave. And some of those reasons are they convince themselves that like, this is my calling and I'm doing it. But there's also a reality of like, what else am I? I don't even know what else there is to do because this is the only thing I've ever been exposed to or tried or done. I don't know.
I think that if people are listening and you have done a DTS, you've been in YWAM, you know someone who has, like, hopefully this podcast conversation has been validating that you've been through a really intense experience that did not prepare you to be in touch with your body and yourself and your emotions. And it also did not actually bring you what you were desiring, which was community and being a part of a movement that was doing good in the world. And so I just want to say, like, you're going to have a lot of complicated feelings about this. Maybe you're like me and Meg, who both already in this conversation have been like, I literally forgot that ever happened. And, you know, like that's a trauma response, babes. Like, let's be honest about that. And there's a reason why I have my own podcast. I write a lot on the internet. I have never talked about YWAM because it's just like, ugh, it's like too much. And it was at such an important time in my life, being 17 and just having no concept of who I was or what I wanted to do. And they were very prepared to keep me in all of the days of my life. And so I just want to say, if it seems like this impacts you in a lot of ways, like it's because it did.
Yeah.
And you deserve like all the care and love and support in the world, which you might not have if you invested your, you know, time and energy and community into these spaces. And so I'm in the space, right, where I am slowly building up community outside of Christian organizations. My younger sister's in the same way. And it's really hard work and it is so worth it. But I just want to just, I don't know, throw that out there for people listening because it's a really big deal. We don't get to process it. And we certainly have not been able to process it with other Christians, which is why I think it's important to do work like this. I'm going to throw this out there. It's not a word from the Lord, but it is on my heart that we need to be putting these stories out there more of what YWAM was like, the abuses we experienced in it. And so I'm already working on my own projects, but I'm like, if somebody wants to put together a Substack where other people can share their experiences, because one of the things a cult does, right, is it doesn't give you any avenue to critique, to share your experience, to get any justice, to hold anybody accountable. So we have to create those avenues ourselves. And so I'll just put that out there. This really has not been done enough. And I have not seen like an organized movement of this happening. I'd love to see a collaborative space where these stories can be shared. So I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah. Too. And even in researching for this episode, I only found a few people like publicly online talking about YWAM.
Exactly.
I think specifically why we want to delve into YWAM A is obviously we have some personal experience with it, but there's something really nefarious about YWAM, the way that they do things, how far reaching it is, and how it seems more nefarious to me than like you went on a short-term mission trip with your church. Like it is much more culty than that because there's a very specific YWAM way of doing things. And I think especially if you've left YWAM, I don't think you realize it when you're in it. And then when you get out of it, it's like, oh fuck, that took over my entire life. And that's what they want. And that's what they do. And watching, I've seen so many people come out of it and being there on the other side and just yeah, I think that building community and having a space, safe space for people to process this is important. And we will keep having these conversations. Are you good on, we didn't get into the publishing or the music. Are you going to save that for
your
next Substack?
There's so much I could have said, but it's fine. If anybody's curious, I do think their publishing like branch is really important because it gets kids. Their books are targeted at kids ages 11 to 14. They're very specific about that. That's bad, y'all. Yeah. And all the books, oh, I mean, the one I read through this morning about William Carey is such revisionist history. He's a total dick and like locked his wife up in India and she didn't want to go. And three of her kids died. And he's her, you know, he's, according to YMM, he's the father of modern missions, right? This is the best guy ever, right? So stuff like that. It's just so insidious. You could also go Google if you want to be dramatized. Worship is a huge part of YWAM. It's a huge part of cults, like orchestrating this. I mean, cults. I mean, American cults. Yeah. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just the worship music that they're still putting out that's very popular. It's pretty creepy. If you're not in a dark room full of other youth and you're not 17, like just, I would just encourage people if you're interested, like, you can Google that on YouTube, experience one of the songs for yourself as a grown-ass adult and be like, what is this song actually saying here? It could be an interesting experience for you. But I'm glad you guys are talking about this. I will tell the one funny story I can remember, which is I did a DTS with Lindsay's ex-boyfriend.
Nice.
Ooh. You know, that's a whole thing.
Well, he was my boyfriend at the time. He was my boyfriend when you guys went. And then halfway through, he broke up with me.
For God. For the Lord.
For the Lord.
For the Lord.
For God. For the Lord. So I was not on the same outreach as him. I went to India. I don't know where he went. And I did get pretty sick in India. And when I came back, I was...
God, I hate this story.
You hate this story? Him and his best friend, what they told me when I got back was like, oh my God, you look really good. I bet you can fit into your sister's clothes now. And that was to me such a defining picture of me being like, what the fuck? Like, okay.
I thought you were gonna tell the worm story. That's where I thought you were going.
No, I'm not
gonna
tell that story on a public podcast, but I did get worms, guys. Oh, I got a lot of worms. No. That's why I could fit in Lindsay's pants for once, because I was horribly ill.
Congratulations. My
love
favorite
the patriarchy.
Favorite thing.
Love it.
You look great. Oh, I think I'm actually dying, but thanks so much
I'm
for
really
mentioning my body
so
size. That's like great. So helpful.
Jesus. God. I forgot about that. Oh, that was a whole. Got broken up for the Lord by that asshole. He married someone he met in his DTS, right? That he broke up with me for, actually.
I don't know it wasn't, about that. I don't know.
I believe it.
I thought she was there. I don't know.
Similar type. Let's say that.
Well, good for him. He heard from the Lord and he took action. I love it. Yeah.
Lindsay dodged a bullet. Okay.
He's a bald youth pastor now. Oh, so yeah.
Of course he is. Good. Is his name Josh? God damn it.
No, okay. His name is not Josh.
Okay. Well,
but there,
that narrows it down.
He has the spirit
he
of
has
Josh.
The spirit
upon
of a
him.
Josh. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
Whereas we have Jezebel's spirit.
We're just Jezebel.
All of us.
I love it.
Every single one.
Eaten by dogs.
We want to hear from you. We want to help create this safe space. So please come join us on Facebook. We're going to be asking for people to share stories. And we just want to be a supportive place, a community that's safe for you to come and not trauma dump, but really to just say, hey, I experienced this thing too. We know that we're not alone in these experiences, and we don't want you to feel alone. You can also join us on our Patreon. You can be a paid subscriber, or you can just join the community there. And we want more people to be participating in this conversation, not just because we like talking, but because we've actually found healing. We have found that talking about these things has really made space in me in particular to be more of myself and to show up more authentically and more of who I am. And it's a vulnerable place to be to share these kinds of experiences and stories, but it's important because we are not the only ones who lived these lives. And these organizations are still active. They are, YWAM in particular is still a growing organization. And we got to do what we can to shut it down because we personally know the harms of this. We know what evangelicalism and colonialism have done globally. And it's time for us to say no, to stop it and to say, look, even though we were participants in this world, we don't agree with it. And these are the reasons why. And so I know I'm going to start sharing more of my stories, experiences that I've had both within the church and within missions organizations. And I just want people to know that you're not alone. So please come join the conversation with us. If you just want to hear more from us throughout the week, you can always catch up with us on TikTok and Instagram. We are there posting pretty much every day, and we'd love to start this community with you. And we would love for you to join our community in whatever way you want.
DL, will you give us a quick, what are you up to? Where can people find you? Where can they read your work? You know, we've got the foremost Dobson expert here. So
foremost Dobson expert. Yeah. So I am on Substack right now writing about late diagnosed autism or neurodivergence and healing from high control environments, called Healing is My Special Interest. But I will give y'all an exclusive, worldwide exclusive, that me and my partner Crispin are starting a new project that'll be launching in May that will be all about healing and recovering from religious authoritarian parenting. So that's kind of the Dr. Dobson approach to parenting that impacted, I mean, according to Dobson, like one third of the American population in the 1970s. Had heard his teachings on strong-willed children. So actually the project is going to be called Strong-Willed. It's going to be how to reclaim what it means to be a strong-willed child, even as an adult. So it's not just for people who grew up evangelical, people who experience religious authoritarian parenting. I think you'll enjoy the community we're trying to build there. But I get to be a nerd about all the history I've learned on Dr. James Dobson. So be on the lookout for that. That's launching in May. So this is the first time I've talked about it publicly.
Ah, woohoo!
So, I know.
Holy ghosting. So. That's what happens when you're related to the podcast guest. Sibling privileges.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, thank you for talking shit on YWAM with us today. As Meg already said, please find us on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, you name it. Subscribe to our Patreon or via Apple Podcasts if you don't want to hear ads. And we're just grateful that you guys listened. And we will be back talking more shit on YWAM in a couple weeks.
We love you, ghosties. Bye.